I was feeling like, oh my gosh. Like,
what have we done? What have we done?
Right? But then eventually he was able to like work it through himself. So, you know, that's a maybe slightly less inflammatory version of the things we worry about happening to our kids. Yeah. But I think it was an example to me of like, oh yeah, you give him the space to talk or play and you can heal whatever you thought might have been irreparable.
Welcome to The Lisa Show, where we take a good look at life. Hey, it's Lisa. This is The Lisa Show. And this is your reminder to get yourself a little fall candle. You've seen them on the shelves, all the same scents as last year, every year, but with new labels and names like Autumn Twilight, Honey Crisp Harvest, Toasty Hayride. Listen, it's just all apples and cinnamon, and that's okay, right? You deserve to be cozy. I have a lot more to say about this, and I'm going to exercise restraint and save that for Instagram. But do treat yourself to a candle. That's it. I'm done. You know, sort of. Speaking of Instagram, Stephanie, I loved your comment. And to answer your question about what I'm watching now on BritBox, let me tell you that I got an itemized list from my friend who lives in England. So she knows the stuff that's coming. And she's also seen all of the episodes like in order in its entirety. So she has done the heavy lifting for both of us. So I'm going to post that list on Instagram for us, depending on your interest. Do you like murder? Do you like comedy? Do you like, you know, listen, I'm going to take care of it on Instagram. And thank you for asking. People don't ask about TV enough. Thank you. Okay, let's dive in. Today, we've got somebody on you probably recognize. She's a comedian, a writer, a filmmaker, and she's been a friend of the show for a while. A staple on the Council of Moms, Whitney Call is someone I can rely on to be 100% real. And she's also a parent I really admire. Now, Whitney is half a generation behind me. not full, just a half. She's got young kids. And this is part of the reason why I wanted to bring her on, because that is a uniquely stressful stage. And she has some amazing tips for communicating with children, regulating your own big emotions while helping your kids navigate theirs, and dealing with the anxiety that comes with motherhood. And let me just tell you that you don't have to be a mom of young kids to get something from this. I may have started this conversation from the angle of, oh, this is for our friends who are still changing diapers and packing the lunches. But as it turns out, anxiety is universal. Big emotions, as a parent of kids with big emotions, is profoundly familiar at any age. And another one I'm sure all moms can relate to, and this is actually where our conversation started, our good old friend, imposter syndrome.
Hello. Hello.
How are you?
Good. I'm feeling a lot of imposter syndrome. I mean, I feel like if you took a camera into my house, I would just be exposed as another person who doesn't know what the heck I'm doing.
This is probably one of the reasons why I want to talk to you,
okay,
right? I mean, don't all the best moms have imposter syndrome?
I guess. I feel like maybe it's not. I read this meme once that was like, I flout imposter syndrome by actually being incompetent. I don't think I'm incompetent. I actually am. So I don't even have imposter syndrome.
You don't know.
You don't.
That's your tag. That's all of our taglines, right? Parenting, you don't know. It's never the end of the story.
Yes.
And so I appreciate you being able to dive into this. Before we really get into the nitty gritty of what you have to share with us, I would love to know how you introduce yourself, how you see yourself, and your stage of parenting right now.
Yeah. So, I mean, I usually introduce myself as, you know, I'm Whitney. I'm probably a little awkward in social situations, but I'm a writer and a comedian and a filmmaker. So I get it right eventually with storytelling and socializing. And I am a parent of three boys. They are ages 8, 7, and 6. They were very close together. Most of it was planned. And one of them just was really meaning to be here at the time he meant to be here. So yeah, I think for the first like 5 years of child rearing, I don't remember a lot.
Really?
It was, I mean, I remember moments, but honestly, like I see pictures of myself and I look dead in the eyes because it's, you know, I had three in diapers for a good chunk of time.
Oh, wow.
And honestly, the diapers part was easier because then I just didn't have to pay attention to like, when do you need to pee? But like it was just this crazy, I would say, after our third baby, I knew it was going to be crazy, but I didn't know how crazy. And I would tell people like, yeah, in 3 years, we'll feel normal again. And that's about what it was. In about 3 years, once he was able to, yeah, go to the bathroom and sometimes be able to like buckle his own car seat, it just seemed like, okay, we're kind of normal people again.
Right,
and we're not just in like baby phase, baby phase, baby phase. Because that in and of itself, I'm just like, man, just survive. Just survive, babies. And then we'll get to like feeling like a person again.
Oh man, just hearing Whitney talk about that particular phase, survival, it brings back memories. I think every mom has been there. And Whitney came prepared for this conversation with some survival tips, lessons from the trenches. One of them was the idea of being a thermostat. This is a metaphor that Whitney learned that changed the way she thought about interactions at home with big feelings.
I would say there's probably like two or three tidbits that just are going on in my head all the time right now. So my husband Steven and I, we took this class that was basically like learning play therapy, but as a parent. All three of our kids go to therapy. We just, I mean, the way our health insurance works, it's the same copay as like a doctor's visit, which is great. And so honestly, we were like, why not? Just get them in, let them start learning tools. And what someone said in our class was to be a thermostat, not a thermometer. Because a thermometer essentially is telling you what the temperature is, and it's rising with the temperature, but a thermostat can control the temperature. And so when your child is coming to you with all these emotions, you can match your emotions to them. And often I do. Like, that is my knee-jerk reaction, where it's like, you're angry? You're angry?
Settle down!
Stop being angry! Yeah, right? Like, and so to just understand that my brain, theoretically, is more developed than their brain. And so I have the tools to be able to create that little bit of distance between the stimulus and my reaction, right? And it takes so much practice, especially when I'm overwhelmed, when I'm tired, but to just recognize, like, when my child is coming to me with something huge for them, that I can meet that. I can validate their feelings for sure, but I can meet that in a way where my role now is to help them work through it and not to respond to it and have all of my emotions coming up against it. So I feel like as a parent, that's like, I think the first thing I would say is just the more practice that I can get in being a thermostat and not a thermometer, I think goes a long way. Especially, I have a child with a lot of emotional dysregulation. He has really bad anxiety and ADHD. And for a long time, we didn't even know he had ADHD because it manifested through emotional dysregulation. It wasn't one of those like, oh, he can't concentrate or he's bouncing off the walls. It was just he blew up all the time to the point where his brothers were walking on eggshells like, don't tell this brother that I did this. Oh no, this brother's going to get mad. You know, it just was like fear. And so there was already that like ready to react, like, come on, because I was just tired, right? But recognizing that this person is not giving me a hard time. He is having a hard time. So how can we adjust the temperature here? And it doesn't always work.
I like that. It's doable, but at least you're cognizant of it.
Yes. That awareness, I think, is 60% of it. It's like, oh, I'm feeling this in my body right now. I can take a moment. I can walk away from this conversation and just get my emotions in check before I say something back that is just going to raise the temperature.
I love Whitney's description of what it looks like to be a thermostat. It's an empowering image, especially because in the heat of the moment, pun intended, when emotions are running high, no matter how old your kids are, you feel your emotions rising to match. Maybe that's a side effect of empathy or just being a mom. You feel what your kids feel, or an opposite equal reaction. It's hard because it's involuntary. But remembering that you are the thermostat is a reminder that this is in your control and you have the ability to reset the temperature. Whitney had another coping skill for situations like this, something that adds clarity to the chaos. And this has to do with kids talking in code.
Oftentimes when my kids are coming to me, this is something that I read in a book when they were babies. And now I'm just starting to like, oh yeah, this totally makes sense. But essentially it was in this book, Between Parent and Child, where they were saying that children basically talk to you in code. They aren't saying what they really mean. They are saying their version of what just came into their brain based off of what they're feeling. So as parents, we don't necessarily need to respond to what they're saying. We should be responding to how they're feeling. And not in a way like, I mean, this is a phrase used a lot, but like when your child's drowning, don't try to teach them how to swim. Right? But like if they're having this meltdown, that's not the time to be like, yes, I know you wanted to play with Legos. We're not playing with Legos right now though, because it's time for dinner. It's not about the Legos. You're seeing like my child is overtired right now, or my child didn't get a lot of time with me one-on-one and they're feeling kind of isolated, or my child, like it's up to us essentially to read the code. And that's why I think that little bit of buffer between stimulus and reaction is important, is because then it gives us a chance to kind of decode what's going on in there. And then we can respond instead to the emotion where it's like, you're feeling really overlooked right now, or you seem to be struggling with this unfairness, or you know, as soon as you can like highlight something they're feeling, oh, it de-escalates so quickly, because maybe they didn't know how to tell you and it got all garbled up, but you saw it and you were able, instead of trying to defend the thing you're trying to get through to them, you were just able to see, you're feeling this. And it just like, you know, I feel like 9 times out of 10, my kids just start like, yes, like that's what's going on. Yeah. I'm not perfect at it. I feel like Steven's much more perfect at this than I am, because I tend to be like, but if they don't respect the rules, then they're going to grow up and be a miscreant. And, you know, like it's I guess all the anxieties and fears that get in my way. But when I am able to remember, okay, they're screaming at me about this right now, but it's not that.
Yeah.
They are feeling this.
And you're modeling to them how to do that for themselves.
Yes.
Talk about being a thermostat. This modeling that Whitney's talking about, naming feelings and creating a buffer which allows chaotic situations to de-escalate, it's more than just a teaching tool. As Whitney's about to explain, one of the biggest barriers to implementing emotionally intelligent parenting techniques is that you have to do it while you're overstimulated, overwhelmed, overtired, all the things. Your thermometer is maxed out, and that's when you're called upon to regulate the temperature of the room. No one needs a reminder, but this is hard. Well, here's the good news. You don't have to be your best all the time. Nobody is.
I asked my therapist, I was like, I'm overloaded. I'm, you know, overstimulated. I'm melting down. How can I be expected to hold all this right now? And they said, honestly, you can model this right in front of your kid where it's like, oh, I am feeling really overstimulated. I'm feeling so angry. I'm feeling really frustrated. I'm tired, whatever it is, right? You can say like, oh, I'm feeling it like in my chest. It's really hot and it just is going up into my head right now. It feels really uncomfortable. Oh, I need to like take some breaths. I'm tensing my body right now, so I'm going to just relax it. And just like right there, talking through it, my kids will watch me when I'm doing it, because they're like, well, mom tells me to do this all the time. And so as soon as I start doing it for myself, it's like, wow, my mom has these emotions too. And look at what she just did. And so that for me, it isn't just a teaching tool. I actually do need it. I need to take that moment sometimes and be like, okay, I'm going to talk out loud about how this is going on in my brain. And my kids do whatever's going on. They usually stop what they're doing and pay attention to me, because they're like, whoa, like mom's being vulnerable and she's sharing what she's feeling and she's working through it.
Okay, pausing right here. This sounds like an amazing technique for anyone dealing with big emotions. Overwhelm, frustration, anxiety, fatigue. Talking through it out loud, labeling the feelings, and taking the time to log what it's doing to your body or your clarity in that moment. That's just a good idea. But then, by allowing yourself to name and process feelings out loud in front of kids, as vulnerable as that is, you can practice emotional self-care while teaching kids to do the same. This is a way to lower the temperature, address the root cause, and preserve your own sanity. Back to this idea of speaking in code, Whitney pointed out that not all communication with kids is created equal. In particular, there's an instinct a lot of parents have to ask questions in the moment, which realistically may not be helping to lower the temperature. This may not have happened to me this week in my own home. I mean, hypothetically speaking, it might not be a good idea to ask a lot of questions when you want to know the answers right in the moment. You might need to just take a step back. Anyway, enough about that. Whitney made a great comparison to childbirth.
In the moment, too, I feel like it just boggles their brain a bit more to be asking questions, right? I did natural birth, and my instructor was always like to Stephen, hey, don't come up to her when she's in the middle of labor and say, do you want a drink? Do you want something to snack on? Do you want some ice chips? She was like, just go caveman mode and hold up like a rag with ice on it, or like a steaming hot rag, and just put them both in front of her and she'll take the one that she wants. And I feel like similarly, it's like when you're trying to de-escalate, when you're trying to work through something big, like it makes everything more muddled to be like, are you feeling sad? Are you angry at this person? It's just like, you're feeling this. It seems like you're experiencing this right now. That is so frustrating. You're so frustrated right now. It's just like this immediate pathway to like, oh yeah, like she gets it. She sees it. Yeah.
This is such a cool insight and it makes sense. Nobody likes an interrogation, least of all when you're in pain, at wit's end, or already feeling misunderstood. Side note, nobody likes to be sung to, especially when you're in pain, which my husband did during each one of our children's births because he thought it would be funny. Also, not a time to try out new material, okay? Yeah, no. Funny later, not in the moment. As a parent, taking a whack at naming kids' emotions could be a shortcut to them feeling seen, which is the whole point of us asking the questions, isn't it? We're trying to express that we care, that we're interested, that we genuinely want to know what is going through their minds. Presenting a multiple choice or throwing them an option may be a more effective way to do it than open-ended questions. Now, this whole time, we've been referencing anxiety, and it's definitely included in all of the big emotions we've been talking about. But Whitney had some thoughts on coping with anxiety, the kind of anxiety that I think we all know too well.
I don't know any mom who doesn't have a little anxiety. So I bring up anxiety a lot because it is, like, you know, I feel like anxiety is often just like it's unease about the future, right? You're just constantly looking at, like, how will this affect in the future, what's going to happen to us?
What will this mean?
Yes. And with young children, when it's like, I don't know what's going to happen when hormones hit them. I don't know what's going to happen when they start like bringing in other people in their relationships that are more important than me.
Let's not talk about that right now. We're talking about younger kids. We're not talking about
I'm staring clear of that.
Just kidding.
But it's this big empty void, right? Where it's like, I can populate it with as much as I want, but it hasn't happened yet. But
and it's consistent in all phases of parenting.
Thank you. I'm so glad it's going to just keep going.
Oh, shoot. I shouldn't have said that.
No, I'm not blind. I know that I will worry about my children till I die. But I guess I'll just manage it a little better with these things. Because I feel like everything that either I do to my kids that I'm like, man, that was the wrong step. Like, gosh, I messed up. I scared my kid today, or I made them feel horrible about themselves, or, you know, just different things like that. Or, you know, when they start going to school and they come home and it's like, whoa, 7 hours is like, I have no control. you have all this influence. Maybe you have someone bullying you. Maybe you have a teacher who, like, just doesn't understand your needs in the class. You know, it's just all these things that you don't have control over. And so I think there's this constant fear of, like, is this what's going to mess up my kid? Is this what's going to make them retreat from this beautiful, amazing soul that they are? Like, is this going to ruin it, right? Is what I just keep wondering. And it came to me on a Pinterest board from Dr. Becky, but she essentially was like, hey, trauma doesn't come from the event. It comes from the lack of processing after an event. And we talked about this in our parenting class too, where it essentially was like, it doesn't matter what you do as much as what you do after what you did. So you can always repair. You can always process. You can always come to your child. I have learned to just lean hard into apologizing, and not in a way where it's like, I'm sorry I did this. I did it because you were doing that. Like, that's what I want to say, because it's like, maybe I can still have a teaching moment in this apology. But no, to just be like, hey, I shouted at you today and that was not okay. I really was overwhelmed and I didn't make a good choice. And just like being able to have those moments where everything's de-escalated, usually it's before bedtime, but you can have these heart-to-hearts where you talk through something, and or it's like, hey, like this happened at school and that was not okay. Like that person was really like did something that was not okay with you. And I'm so sorry. And you can talk through these things that allow them to feel like, oh, because if you just leave it out there, right? I think of stuff that I deal with now that was unresolved in childhood. And it's usually because you're filling in the pieces yourself where it's like, oh, I must have done something if this person treated me that way. Or if this happened to me, it must have been me. It must have been this, or, you know. And so to just walk with your child through those moments to be like, it wasn't okay and it hurt you and that makes sense. Your feelings are valid. I think that is what eventually is leading to healing. It doesn't mean like, oh, we have to be perfect parents. We have to never shout at our kids. We have to never do this.
Never make a mistake.
Exactly. I think it's more just afterwards, what can you do? And honestly, I think it really does end up healing things.
I love this point. It's never too late. Contrary to what anxiety will tell you, it's not the incident that leaves a lasting impression as much as what you do next. And thank goodness, because who hasn't been in this situation of in the moment or after the fact, realizing that you made the wrong call? It's inevitable. And there's so much guilt and shame and anxiety because you care and you want to get it right. And it turns out that there are a lot of ways to repair mistakes in parenting, and you don't have to do it alone. I loved one example that Whitney shared of something just like this.
We had a moment where we watched Stardust with our kids. Now, a couple years ago, they loved Stardust, and we watched it again, and I think they're now just getting old enough that they really can get scared by things.
Oh.
I think when they were younger, it maybe just went over their head. I don't know. Maybe we're showing our kids too old of movies. I don't know. But we watched Stardust with them because they loved that movie at one point. But there's this scene at the very end where Michelle Pfeiffer is really scary. She's a witch and her like beautiful facade fell away. And now she's like this craggly, scary woman. And she's basically using a voodoo doll to make this guy's body fight with someone else. It's a creepy scene. I didn't remember this the last time we watched it. But we watched this scene and it's supposed to be kind of funny because the guy's ghost is watching himself fight this other guy. And he's like, well, I'm not doing that. How's this? You know, it's supposed to be kind of over the top, right? My six-year-old did not see it that way. And for a long time was like, he was really scared after that movie.
Aww.
And so part of what we did, because we were doing, like, we do play therapy with our kids. We're like 30 minutes a week. We will sit down with them in these toys in this room and we just let them do what they want to do with the toys. And we just kind of comment on what's happening and we join in if they want us to join in. But for weeks, every time I would play with this son, he would pick up a doll and he wanted me to mimic its actions. He said, this is a voodoo doll and this is you. And it was creepy,
yeah.
Right? Like it was. He was like hitting the thing. He wanted me to react to it. I was feeling like, oh my gosh. Like,
what have we done?
What have we done? What have we done? Right? But honestly, he just had the space to be able to like act it out, or, you know, play really is, I think, the language of kids until their prefrontal cortex is a little more developed. Like, that is how they communicate. So yeah, it was freaky to me because I was like, what does this mean about my son? But for like weeks, he was reenacting things that scared him, but now he was in the driver's seat. And like now, like it doesn't scare him anymore. He was having nightmares. He was waking up at night and it eventually went away. And he doesn't do that anymore with our play sessions. So, I mean, I think something clicked in his brain where he was like, okay, this isn't something to be afraid of anymore, because I've seen it enough times now that I get it. And I don't know that we would have ever figured that out if we just were like, oh, it's okay. Like, it's not real. And then just like, good night. Which I think sometimes I want to do, because I'm like, well, I don't want to dwell on it. I don't want to make it a bigger deal than
emphasize
it is.
It. Mm-hmm.
Right. But when we just sort of like opened the floor for him, it was like, oh, this really is a big deal for him. But then eventually he was able to like work it through himself. So, you know, that's a maybe slightly less inflammatory version of the things we worry about happening to our kids.
Yeah.
But I think it was an example to me of like, oh yeah, you give him the space to talk or play and you can heal whatever you thought might have been irreparable.
You can make the space to heal what you thought would have been irreparable. And kids are resilient. I do believe that they are designed to survive and thrive being raised by parents who are figuring it out and doing their best. I love that message. And it tied into something else that Whitney said when I asked her what she's learned, what she wishes she knew, especially for this stage of parenting.
I need to have so much more self-compassion than I thought I needed to, because I think I go into most situations like overprepared. I'm pretty type A. Like it is just like my birth plan, right? I knew what I wanted. I knew what I would do if this didn't work out. And I like raising babies, you know, having a newborn, like I had a schedule. I was able to like get from like, we can crack this code. And now it's like, you're building the plane while it's taking off. Like, it's like, where is the plan? Where, you know? And so I make mistakes constantly and I see the mistakes, right? I see my oldest talking to himself sometimes in ways where I'm like, whoa, why on earth would you talk to yourself like that? That's so cruel, or that's so sad. And I'm saying that internally, but I realize, oh my gosh, he's talking to himself the way that I've talked to myself, or that sometimes even when I've been at my lowest, I've talked to him, right? And so I look at these things and I'm like, oh my goodness, why am I allowed to be in charge of small people? Like, there's just so many ways I can mess it up, you know? But then to recognize, like, I am the mom of these kids. I am supposed to be these kids' mom. Like, I can see strengths that I have, or even weaknesses that I have, are opportunities for us as a family unit to learn together and to grow. And so all I can do is just give myself grace and just try my best. And that is, I think, hard for me to do in any area of my life, but it's just constant practice with my kids. Mm. So it's just constantly on my mind of like, hey, you did your best and that's enough. And that's what I send my kids off to school with every day, is like, are you going to try your best today? And they'll say, and that's enough. Because we just want each other to know, like, if you did your best, it is enough. Even if you make a mistake, you gave enough and you'll be able to fix that because you've got grace and you've got time.
I love that. Grace and time. You know, we have talked, not on the microphone, maybe we have, but about our faith and how that affects everything. And as you were talking about that self-compassion and that grace, it just immediately reminded me like of how much prayer is a part of my parenting plan. Where it's like these, I almost comedically, like almost like how many, my most desperate prayers have been like, I don't know what to say. situation. I 100%.
Oh, like, yeah.
And my immediate thought is, I need to ask someone who's in charge because I shouldn't be in charge. And just what you just said just absolutely reminded me of that. And I'm wondering if your faith plays into those moments of self-compassion.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Like, I believe in a higher power who isn't going to shame me into progression. I believe in a God who encourages me. And the times I feel closest to God aren't when I'm like, oh, I should really be working on this, or, yeah, I'm not really good at that yet. I know it's on my list. It's on my list of sins, my list of shortcomings, my list of ways that I'm not showing up as my best self. But like when I actually feel that divinity, right? That wholeness is when I'm feeling like, wow, look at all you're able to accomplish. That's amazing. And look at how much more you can accomplish as you keep going. And so it sounds counterintuitive that compassion can create more growth. But if that's the way that my God motivates me, it makes sense, right? It makes sense with psychology. It makes sense with all these different ways of parenting that if you are treating yourself kindly, I would then naturally be able to look at my son after he hits my other son and be able to say like, wow, you had a really big emotion right there. So it starts with me, right? And I think that for sure, every moment of the day is a prayer. And if I can tune into that higher power that's telling me like, oh my goodness, you have it within you already. Look at how you tapped into it just then. Look at how you're continuing to tap into it this way. That spreads my wings way more than any other way I, you know, tend to motivate myself.
Yeah. I'm so grateful to Whitney for sharing. In the spirit of being a thermostat rather than a thermometer, self-compassion is a saving grace that you can and should offer yourself out loud in front of your kids so they can do the same. Whatever phase of parenting you may be in, I hope that you will have compassion for yourself, and not just because it's a good idea or it will make life a little softer, or even because you're trying to model it for the impressionable minds watching and copying your every move, but because a credible source has already confirmed that you are the right person for this job. You've totally got it in you, and you're allowed to grow just like your kids are doing. We're all a work in progress. You deserve grace.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio, hosted by Lisa Valentine Clark. This episode was produced by Becca Hurley, with help from Blake Morse, with post-production by Kit Merrill. For more information on our guest, Whitney Call, links to her works will be in our show notes. If you haven't subscribed to The Lisa Show on YouTube, you can find even more content on our channel, including The Council of Moms, filmed live in our studio. As always, thanks for your messages. We read them all, and thanks for listening.